So welcome to the Classic Cult TV Club, and today we're looking at Life of Brian.
Which is, of course, TV, obviously.
It's a special.
Because it's the Easter season, and also Life of Brian is celebrating its 40th anniversary this year, and Monty Python is celebrating its 50th anniversary.
Okay, so today we have Lisa.
Hey!
We have Alex.
Hey!
We have Jeanette.
Hi.
And I'm Justin. So welcome, and we'll have a look at the Life of Brian. So we've just watched Life of Brian, an old classic that everybody loves. What did people think about re-watching it for the first time in quite some time?
Yeah, it's been about 10 years for me, because I think around the first time I watched it was when I sat my husband down. So it would have been, what, maybe about 10, 13 years ago when I made him watch all of the Monty Python movies and the Flying Circus. And it holds up. There's a lot I've forgotten.
Yeah.
And I kept coming out with all these different one-liners. Like, oh, yeah, of course. And that. And I forget about that.
It's like the four movies. And this is probably the most narrative-based ones, so you forget the ones that aren't tied to the narrative, whereas, like, say, Meaning of Life or...
Holy Grail.
Those are so vignette-y. You can be like, oh, this is the one where Lancelot goes to the castle and everything involved with that is like a sketch.
Whereas for this, you can just forget
the What Have the Romans Done For Us or the bit with the UFO. That random...
Yes!
But yeah, just the fact that the little bits and pieces you just keep forgetting because they're like a little vignettes that just aren't part of the whole major plot line.
I had totally forgotten the spaceship. I think I remembered all but the spaceship because it doesn't fit.
I kept on wondering if the star at the beginning is, of course, the spaceship flying over.
It looks like a spaceship flying over.
So the Star of Bethlehem was a spaceship.
Yeah. And that got me now because I never thought about it like that, but it makes total sense. Because that whole UFO scene makes no sense and it jars me so much. Now it makes more sense and I can fit it into the narrative.
Well, I don't know if it's true.
I'm taking your truth and I'm saying the truth is now canon.
Well, at the time, there was this kind of UFO stuff going around. Eric von Daniken and Chariots of the Gods and all that kind of thing.
Well, I always thought it was a von Daniken reference.
Yes, I think it was a von Daniken reference, yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't really know about that because, like, say, UFOs just being a part of, like, pop culture now. Like, I wouldn't have gotten that reference at all.
I think, still at school. I was still living in Ballarat, anyway, when this film came out. My brother was a big Monty Python fan, but it was a little bit before my time. I'd never really watched it. Yeah, he quoted it endlessly.
As Monty Python fans are wanting to do.
I didn't go and see the film, but I remember it was on and the controversy about it, and there was this preacher in Ballarat who was really right-wing, really extreme, and he demanded the cinema apologise and stop screening it. So the cinema extended the season.
Which is not unknown around the world, actually.
We were hearing stories like after the fact of how Norway banned it and the advertising in Sweden was so funny it was banned in Norway.
I was amazed it was banned in Norway.
And it's like there's a thing on the internet, it's called the Streisand effect, where the idea is if you try to ban it, the attempt to ban it gets more publicity, so more people see it.
Yeah, that's what happened in Ballarat.
Just going back to your comments about the quoting, I remember when I was young there were the Monty Python quoters and there were the Cheech and Chong quoters. And which party you went to was sort of a class decision, you know, so I used to go to both of them.
Because I've not seen Cheech and Chong, I wouldn't recognise it.
I grew up with a Monty Python quota, so that's perfect. And I remember when they said the quote about, you know, getting sent back to gladiator school, I used to say that, I used to hear it so many times. I remember quoting it when I was three, you know, if someone did something naughty in the playground, they'd get sent to gladiator school.
What's amazing about this film is I think that it's one of the ones that has the most tropes, that there's just so many tropes
I was saying, it's the most narrative one of the movies they've done.
Apparently they went to Barbados and they all sat down and in 2 weeks worked out the script together, whereas the other films they scripted individually. And that's why this is more cohesive.
This one generally was a lot happier experience than any other one that they filmed. My favourite is Holy Grail, and they filmed that in, is it Scotland? Where Castle Doon? They filmed that in Scotland.
We visited the castle.
Well, every single time you see a castle in Holy Grail, it's the same castle but filmed from different angles.
In the islands of the lake, obviously.
So with Holy Grail, you know, they filmed in Scotland, it was raining, it was miserable. Graham Chapman, of course, was the main character and he was really struggling with alcoholism. So, you know, when he was crossing the bridge, he had serious DTs and there was all of these issues. Yeah. But when they filmed this movie, it was in Tunisia, the sun was shining, everything was great, everyone had a wonderful time.
Wasn't drinking. He was in a much better better state of mind.
Mm. He'd gone back to practicing his doctor, so he was the on-site medic, and everyone had a great time. Yeah. You see the pictures from the set. Mm. They're all in lounge chairs. They're having a great time. It was such a different experience for them. And then they came back to all of the controversy after they got released.
Yes. And there is, of course, a dramatisation of that controversy. It was called...
Holy Flying Circus.
Holy Flying Circus, yes. Thank you.
So good.
Yes, it was really so good. Well done. An amazing characterisation of the individuals.
Yes, they nailed it, didn't they? Yeah. Really good job.
That's the thing, because I've grown up in the post George Carlin, Tim Minchin, even like, say, Christopher Hitchens, that kind of style of comedy. So the controversy of making fun of Christianity isn't really a thing anymore. And the idea of that something like this will be controversial is almost alien to me, just because we've gotten so far.
We've gone so far beyond that.
Yeah. Mm. It was like, say, there's a lot of stuff in, like, say, South Park that would have made this look pretty innocent by comparison.
Yeah, I guess those things have this to thank for that. Yeah. You know, to break that ice and break through.
In England, a lot of councils banned it, including the one apparently in Aberystwyth in Wales, where Judith...
Probably because everybody thought they were the People's Front of Judea.
But yeah, that was one of the things she did when she became mayor, and she organised getting it overturned.
The charity screening of the film in the local cinema, the first ever screening in the local cinema the film.
And I think there's a lot of interesting things. Like, we were talking at the beginning of the movie that the fact that it's made by handmade films, and
EMI originally were going to fund it, and then they withdrew funding because it was too controversial. Mm-hmm. So they approached George Harrison, and he'd been a Monty Python fan right from the first episode of Monty Python. So he mortgaged his house and raised $5 million to fund the film for them.
He must have made it all back. A good investment.
But and handmade films, I was saying it.
Went on from there.
Yeah, it was actually quite a successful production company, but it all started from this making film. It just purely because George Harrison wanted to see a Monty Python movie.
Yes. I said it was the most expensive movie ticket ever bought.
Yeah. And I believe, was it Life of Brian as well, that was invested by Pink Floyd? I think Pink Floyd invested some money in it as well. And yeah, there was a few big names, and they were all just people that they knew that wanted to see them make the movie.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I love the scene of the, you know, What Have the Romans Ever Done For Us? Because, of course, just recently Patrick Stewart did the What Has You Ever Done For Us?
It's just kind of weird how much of that is just seeped into normal conversation style. It's like,
yeah, they were a huge influence on comedy. And they, in turn, were influenced by The Goons. So having...
Because he just happened to be filming something else in Tunisia at the time. Yes. So like, okay, we'll take you for one scene. And
just
he ran off.
Just happened to be.
Who happens to just be in Tunisia?
Minor film industry location for, like, anything ancient Roman, ancient Greek, ancient Mesopotamian.
They filmed Star Wars there?
Yeah, they filmed Star Wars there. It's actually a town called Tatooine in Tunisia. That's why it's called that.
One thing we were debating about at the beginning of this screening was the awesome theme song, the very James Bond-esque Shirley Bassey. I love it.
And I love the graphics.
Classic Terry Gilliam graphics.
Yeah.
And of course, the two Terrys were the ones who, I think they directed all of the Monty Python movies.
This was only Terry Jones.
It was only Terry Jones,
Terry
was it?
Terry Gilliam and Terry Jones directed the previous one together, but this time Terry Gilliam said he didn't want to direct, so he just left it all to Terry Jones.
But then again, Gilliam's done like so many films since then.
That's why I thought it's like
Brazil, Baron Munchausen, 12 Monkeys.
Terry Gilliam films have sort of dropped off the radar quite a bit, actually. So there's even one this year that he's produced, and I don't know the name of it.
It's the Don Quixote one, I think.
Yeah.
He's finally doing the Don Quixote movie.
It was released last year. He finally got to do it.
It's surprising, though, when we were watching it, Terry Gilliam doesn't really pop up very much in it.
Surprisingly, I thought
that was because he was doing more of the directing. I mean, Terry Jones didn't, I thought, for the same reason, but there must have been more to it then, I guess.
Maybe. You want to talk about the politics in this one?
Well, there's something else to talk about.
Yeah, so what politics do people see in the film?
Also just thinking, like the stuff with the People's Front of Judea. The Judean People's Front. Which one's which? Which one's the one that they wanted to be in?
He wanted to be in the People's Front of Judea.
No, it was the one he was actually in. Is it the People's Front of Judea?
Yeah, he was in the People's Front of Judea.
Okay.
Because they were calling it the PFJ at one stage. That's how I remember.
Not the Judean People's Front. It's just, I feel as though, like, rewatching it, the fact that the allegedly anti-Christian blasphemy stuff is not really offensive anymore, but the stuff against the left wing does seem a bit pertinent, where basically they feel like they're talking about the issues, not doing anything about them.
Yeah.
It does feel like that's very much the theme right now, because, like, say, for politics right now, where the right wing's getting huge power and there's a lot of left-wing infighting still, which is very helpful at the moment.
It's all too familiar, and I've been in organisations that have had those splits and the two different groups with slight variations on the name and the splitters, and, you know, you end up with the splitter sitting on the steps by himself because nobody wants to have anything to do with him and forms his own own group and gives himself a name and has members. And we've been through all that so many times. And it's so frustrating because you don't end up achieving anything because of
it. Yeah, and even then, like, I'm following politics online and there's, like, half a dozen different spits in various left-wing peoples and they're all opposed to Trump, but they're not unified enough to be able to actually do anything about it.
Like, you know, they need to all watch Life of Brian again and learn the lesson.
Or that scene where they're all talking about, what we need is action. We can't just sit around talking about it. Let's move now. And then they spend the next couple of minutes all talking about how doing things are not...
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get a motion down. Now, how are we
going to... And then they come at the end and say, yes, we've got a little message to say how very proud we are of you doing this martyrdom.
It's very committee. All very committee. I'm not so sure it's anti-left wing.
I think it's also like making
fun of that real situation that we humans get ourselves into.
Yeah.
All of us. And yeah, it's important, I think, to point this out and the absurdity of it because we need to be reminded of that.
Mm. Yeah. But then again,
and it's a comedy that still holds up because we still see it happening. There's so much that you're going to.
Yes.
I guess because they set it 2,000 years ago, there wasn't a lot that kind of dated.
I think
comedy that you kind of go, oh, I don't know whether that would work as much today as it did then. But a lot of the themes that they were covering, there were so many where I went, oh, that still rings true.
Yeah.
That still does. It's still on point.
Like, so I remember reading somewhere that the left wing parody is actually a parody of the left wing in the Thatcher era, of how they were divided amongst themselves.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess in the era that that was done, you know, you had your little splinter anarchist groups and things like that. And that's what they were kind of trying to portray.
Like, yeah. Like,
so comparatively, we've just watched Das Kapital, of course, previously. And we were saying, oh, well, there's lots of things there that you wouldn't say today. Did you see much of that in Life of Brian? I mean, considering it's considered a very much more controversial film at the time, all the controversial aspects are
the blasphemy stuff. Like, they didn't really have anything else that was hacking that much.
There was a certain four-letter word that was in the original filming and they had to censor it out. There's a scene in the movie where John Cleese calls someone a klutz. I think that was originally a very similar sounding word. And yeah, no, that was the line that they kind of went, well, we can have the full frontal nudity, but we're not going to drop the word.
Speaking of which, I was actually reminded of the fact that, again, like, we also don't have any sort of Mary Whitehouses anymore. We don't have any right-wing sort of, we need to be very moral in our media anymore. They're not actually prominent enough. Or if they are, they're busy fighting, like, teaching kids that gay people exist. They're doing that sort of stuff rather than attacking any sort of violence in the media, sex in the media. They're not doing that anymore.
Well, they can't get a voice if they do exist.
Yes, that's it. There's not the megaphone for them that there would have been, you know, 30, 40 years.
I was also thinking as well, and there are, like, the religious peoples, and I think they're also picking their battles very carefully so that they know if they say they're teaching our kids that being gay is okay, they can half bet that they can brand the pro-gay side as being the more upset about things, the more politically correct side of things, and they're playing that very well so that they didn't get branded as the fun police or whatever.
40 years it would have been blasphemy. You know, 30 years ago they were saying if you listen to rap music you're going to be prone to violence and joining a gang.
Yeah.
You know, even up until 10 years ago and still today now, it's like if you play a violent video game, you're going to, you know, do something violent and shoot people. You know, it's just, there's always the next bandwagon.
And even
kind of,
like,
comes on.
Now same-sex marriage is legal, now against trans people, and yeah, just like picking the next battle and making sure that there's still something to complain about.
Look, Alex, won't somebody think of the children? It's the children we're worried about.
Yes,
the children can't make their own decisions. Did anyone have particular scenes that they were their favourites? I'm trying to think of the ones that I really enjoyed. I loved the stoning scene.
And that was
just an absolute delight. You know, and just, you know, all of these men dressed as women, pretending to be men with their fake beards. It's just such a great little scene.
Yeah. Okay, nobody throws a stone until I blow this whistle, even, and I suppose that's importantly, even if they do say Jehovah. And of course, bigger stickers and
apparently that was really hard to film because they had to keep all the sort of soldiers on the edge of laughing without actually laughing and getting them sort of holding back laughter for the director was really difficult.
Mm.
I think my favourite is I'm not an individual.
Yes, we're all individuals.
We're all individuals.
I'm not.
I don't know if I could pick just one. There are so many. It's all through the film.
Release Watcher scene because I can't say it either. So.
Release Roger. Yes.
I found that funnier when I was younger, but then these days it's like we saw and I kind of went, eh, Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it's also because, like, when you're younger, you're fun with, like, the puns and the silly stuff. Yeah. And it was, like, it feels a bit dated now.
Yes.
Not, like, dated, but, like, you're over it.
Of course, this is one of those things that you remember so well.
Yeah.
That you've seen
it. Well, yeah, and like, so, say, yeah. Nobody will do the...
For us, it's not original, but yeah. For people who haven't seen it before, I think they'll still find
but,
it.
But, like, comparing it to the Dead Parrot sketch, like, that was good, but, like, because every single person knows it off by heart, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah. And it's a classic quote when I first tried to get my husband into Monty Python. I showed him all this stuff, like showed him Flying Circus, and he went, yeah, but I've seen this joke before. And I'm going, yes, but these guys did it first. You know? And there's a lot of that. It's like these guys did it before, and everyone else is copying.
Yeah. What have the Romans done for us?
Which to me rings really true of the Spanish Inquisition sketch, which is my favourite Flying Circus sketch. Too, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, you strike that very often, though, don't you? I guess if you know the history of the films or the comedy, you know that certain jokes have their origins here, and so that's your favourite.
There's also
other people remember hearing it somewhere else, not realising that it was something.
And what I did like about that scene is like the jokes about the R words and stuff and the S words, but what I hadn't remembered was the emoting that they did with those scenes, you know, and so then the guy comes up and he can't do his S's, and so then he's reading out the list of all of the criminals and they can start with S's. S, and he's like, let me do that, and you can see John Cleese just going, no. And it was all of that stuff that's not said that I'm like, this is brilliant, you know.
Yes, there are lots of little acting things like when John Cleese first hesitates the moment he hears Biggest Dickus. Lisp. That's just brilliant.
You're like, here we go again.
I
really like that kind of acting where people are not saying anything. Their face is saying
they don't need to.
Especially like the Biggest Dickus scenes. Like, there's like 30 seconds of just like...
It's like just faces.
Yeah, it's like, here's a wife, you know. Oh, goodness. Holding in the air, it's like...
I don't know whether it's worth me adding, as controversial as it is, I don't like the end song. I don't like it. I always look on the bright side of life. I just don't. I think
is
don't
there
like
a personal
the way,
reason for that?
I just don't know. I don't feel like maybe because
it tries.
It feels trite. It's a bit naff. It kind of ends the movie on a bit of a weird note.
Yeah.
And it's a bit kind of silly. You know, you've just had all of this stuff happen, and then it's just kind of ends a bit flippantly. And it's like, I don't want it to be like grief stricken.
It's a happy ending.
I know, but it's
a happy ending.
And if they'd have not done the song, it would have been just as good. It would have been a lot better. And for some reason, didn't they say recently that song...
It's the most played at funerals?
Yes, it's the most popular funeral song. And I'm going, if someone plays that at my funeral, I'm going to cut them. But I won't, because I'll be dead.
You'll haunt them as a ghost.
I will haunt them forever.
Always look on, how dare you?
Turn that off! And I don't know whether I'm alone with this. Like, I must be.
It's also overplayed nature as well. Like, that's the thing. Like, if you have a song that's like overplayed enough, you might get
annoyed at it. Maybe it's just been overplayed.
So it's the radio hits thing. You've heard it too much. You're not sure.
Maybe. Yeah. Don't know. But I always feel like I'm the only one who feels that way.
Yeah. So, I think it's a great ending.
Are you just saying that just to rile her up?
I am, yes. I really do think it's a really good ending, because even though he's being nailed to a cross, they're all laughing and happy and singing. The juxtaposition is just so weird, and it's always been viewed as being this quirky scene that ends the movie.
I
like it.
Someone said to me it was kind of like they compared it to the ending of Doctor Strangelove, you know, how it's
Time's
going on and you got this really lovely song at the end, you know, and it's like, but still, no, I like that ending. I just don't like life right
now.
If anyone is listening to this and they agree with me, please tell me I'm not alone in the world.
Yes. Send your emails to wherever.
hit like on the video. On the audio, sorry.
Yeah, please hit like. Share it with your friends.
Hit like if you think that Always Look on the Bright Side of Life is a silly song to end a movie with.
And also if you don't. Okay. So thank you very much. That was the Classic Cult TV Club.
Special. We're watching a movie instead of a TV show.
Yeah. As yet another special that we keep on sneakily doing.
Yes. Next time, the special with a movie, neither of which are TV. So next time we're going to do a special where it's radio, I guess. I don't know.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah!
Or the original Goon Show.
Or next time we do Cult TV Club special on like sculpture or painting or something.
That's it. We'll do something classic and serious.
Yes.
Okay. To match my mood for today, we can do the Goon Show episode on the dreaded Lurgy.
Okay, so thanks very much.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.